You've done your country proud.
Never really see Lara struggle. And it's about 6 yards over the fence for Lara.
Well, I don't think he's only bowling short. I think he's bowling rubbish. He's bowling like my Auntie Annie when she'd had too much sherry to drink.
How about that? Absolutely brilliant from Shane Warne.
Brilliant Yorker. Absolutely brilliant. Malinga with six.
Yet another 50 by Sachin Tendulkar. He'll raise his bat.
There it is. Big 100 for Peterson, a big 100 for England.
Short. Oh, it could be the best. It's long for Chris Gayle. Oh, my days. 40 of 9 deliveries.
Brilliant from Broad. 8 for 15. Best bowling figures on this ground.
That'll get there. Joe Root has gone to 100 here at Trent Bridge.
You are listening to Sticky Wicket on URN Sport.
Yes, welcome to the second podcast of the Sticky Wicket on URN with me, Orvi. We'll be talking about New Zealand versus Australia series, the India versus England, and the upcoming PSL and the Indian Premier League this time around. I'm joined in the studio by four excellent panelists in Harry, Omar, Laura and Joe. So yeah, let's start with New Zealand. As 2017, they have been getting a phenomenal form of recently beating Australia by 6 runs, with New Zealand scoring 286 for the loss of 9 wickets, and Australia with more help of Marcus Stoinis is 146 scoring 280 while losing by 6 runs. Can you guide us through that, Harry? The New Zealand vs Australia game.
Yeah. Well, it was a pretty good score, I'd say, from New Zealand there, 286 at Auckland as well. It's quite a small ground there. I can't remember the name of the stadium. It's like Eden Park, maybe, yeah, in Auckland, and it's quite a small ground, so maybe slightly under par, but I'm not sure what the surface was like on the day. But got Martin Guptill with a great start, 61 off 73 balls, and supported by Neil Broom on 73 off 75 balls, and a late flourish from Jimmy Neesham, 48 off 45 balls, and also Trent Bolt. We'll mention him. He got 16 off 7. That's probably quite good for him. And they finished on 286 for 9, as you just said. And astonishingly, I've just seen here 29 extras in the Australian bowling effort, which obviously was the difference between them winning and losing in the end. And well, we'll move on to Australia's innings. And I think they started pretty badly, actually. Lost a few early wickets, didn't they?
Yeah, they had Marcus Stoinis performing with 146 runs. He's a pretty young batsman. Should he be a permanent pick for the ODI team? Do you guys think so?
I think now, I think he'll be given a go for the foreseeable. Came in, basically scored 146 in an effort of, what was it, 280 Australia getting the end, something like that.
Yeah, they were 67 for 6 as well.
I think they needed about 90 to win with 1 wicket left. And Stoinis was batting with Josh Hazlewood, who's obviously a tail-ender. And Stoinis just basically just hitting everything for 6. It was just pretty astonishing. He was second international. And he got a few wickets as well. So,
but again, looking at the depth of this Australian squad coming in with Usman Khawaja on the front and then even having Steve Smith, do you think he'll be given a permanent spot or just this glimpse of performance will be overlooked by the Australian side? Because we can see easily that people like even Adam Zampa has not been taken in the squad for the series, so they're just taking in players and then keeping them out. So do you think the Australian board have to look into this, or will they just have to go through
James Faulkner probably under a bit of pressure because he's like the all-rounder in the team. I don't think he's even bowling his full 10 at the moment, even though he's doing quite a good job. So I think he'll be under a bit of pressure. He's not been taking too many wickets. But I'll be surprised if Stoinis doesn't feature in the next game. It'll be a bit hard.
Well, he took 3 for 49 in the bowling effort as well.
Yeah.
So.
He was pretty much a one. Absolutely.
I just heard a news a couple of hours ago that Martin Guptill has been out with a hamstring injury or some sort, and he will not be featuring in the rest of the ODI series. How effective do you guys think that Martin Guptill is to the series and the New Zealand team at the moment?
Yeah, I think he's pretty effective. Like, he's been opening for New Zealand for quite a few years now, and he's always pretty consistent, and you need to get off to a good start. I mean, if you look at some of the best ODI sides, they have a really strong opening pair. I mean, Australia usually do, obviously, with the other series coming up, they're like resting a few players here and there, so they're missing like their key players of Warner and Steve Smith. But definitely coming into the Champions Trophy, they'll want Martin Guptill to be fit again so that they can try and get off to a flyer.
Yeah, I saw him down at when he came to Lancs last year for the T20. He didn't perform particularly well, but I saw his best innings. He got a 76 and he was smashing it everywhere that day. And he's definitely an international world-class player on his day.
Yeah, absolutely. Even I believe that. But having said that, I've noticed the player and of such caliber of Kane Williamson. Do you guys think that Brendan McCullum's decision of quitting at the right time was effective, and Kane Williamson was one of the most vital parts of the New Zealand cricket team at the moment? Because I do believe he is one of the vital parts.
He's their best player, I think.
Yeah, by mile, yeah.
And he's taken to captaincy really well as well. He's not really faltered at all.
So is this side a very big threat to the Champions Trophy this year?
No, I don't think so. Maybe.
I think they're in an outside chance, but I think without McCullum, I think Guptill and McCullum were like probably the best opening partnership in the world. But now McCullum's gone, suddenly it's like...
It depends if it swings or not for Southie and Bolt, and if it doesn't swing, I think they could get smashed around the park.
But the Champions Trophy is going to be held in England, and the pitches are quite fast and bouncy.
Yeah, they're quite conducive to the New Zealand seamers, but I think their batting's a bit weak.
I'd agree.
I look down the order, and there's not too much power down the order. I think they might struggle to get like 350, which might be a par score.
Absolutely. Moving on to the India versus England T20 series. England has had a disaster T20 test as well as ODI series. Do you guys have any says on it?
I don't want to be like overly critical of them, because it's always very difficult playing India in the subcontinent, and we're notoriously not very good at playing the spin. Like, that's
an understatement.
Yes. Obviously Trevor Bayliss has once again like reinstated that we need to improve on spin. I think obviously yesterday's performance, where we got lost 8 wickets for 8 runs, we kind of just need to forget about that. That was quite an incredible achievement to be able to do that. But I think the batting, you can't, we've been so good over the past 2 years or so that's not really the major concern. I think definitely going into the Champions Trophy, it is the bowling, and for me it's those middle overs where we just sort of struggle to maybe like keep the pressure on a bit and take wickets, because if you look at like how we've been performing in the 50 overs over the past few months, we're quite good at taking one or two or three early wickets, like especially like with David William Wokes, that those two working together has been really good. But yeah, it's those middle overs where we kind of need to find that something special.
Do you think Chris Wokes as a player, he played phenomenally in the ODI, should he be a permanent part of the T20 side as well?
I think he could be. I think he may have been rested though, because he's played like pretty much every match. He played 7 tests, every ODI in Bangladesh. I think he played the 2020s as well, so I think he was just rested.
We don't miss him necessarily, because we have Tymal Mills, who obviously can't play in the 50 over because of back injury, and Chris Jordan. I think Chris like 2020 is made for him. He's definitely like, he's a very good death bowler, but when you saw him in the 50 overs, he was maybe a bit weaker at the start of his like bowling innings. So I think, you know, we
inconsistent.
Don't
I think.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm still yet to be convinced by Jordan. I think yesterday proved like it was a flat wicket, and it was pretty much there for Jordan to come in and bowl like a tight spell at the end. And he bowled 2 overs for, I don't know how many. I think one of the overs went for 24.
Yeah, you've rushed him about.
And he just kept bowling the slot. And we see it time and time again with England. When the pressure's on, we saw it in the World T20 final with Stokes, kept bowling length, and we saw it yesterday. And I think Jordan still got to produce it more consistently. Otherwise, someone like Wokes can just come in, and he's fairly.
Another important aspect I've been noticing is that the opening pair, Alex Hill and Jason Roy, if one of them is not there, the team is underperforming. Like seeing Sam Billings in the last two innings, he just got out in the first ball. So do you think this opening pair of Alex Hales and Jason Roy is crucial, and they do need a backup for it?
Yeah, I think Billings doesn't even open for Kent, so I think it was big ask for him to come in and open, and he did. He's done a good job in the ODIs, but 2020 he struggled a bit.
I really rate Sam Billings. Yeah, I think if we gave him enough time, I think there might be question marks over Joe Root in the T20 squad. He's lost his whenever he tries to go for a big shot, he leans back, loses his shape, and he can't often play the big shot.
Yeah, yesterday he missed out. He had 10 dot balls in the middle overs, which led to Owen Morgan getting out due to frustration. So is that a point again? Is Joe Root not fit for T20 anymore, and is he just gonna go ahead with the ODI and test?
I don't know. It's hard to be too critical.
Yeah,
he was the best player in the world T20, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he has been there for us time in, time out. But I think with the 2020 side, there's room for a lot of experiment. There are so many young players and a lot of young batsmen in the 2020 county game, and I think this summer in particular is going to show that and highlight that. I agree with you. Like, Sam Billings is definitely he's definitely one for the future. I don't think we can be too heavily reliant on Jason Roy and Alex Hales, because we need to be, obviously they are an exceptional opening pair, but if one of them gets injured or if one of them falls out of form, we don't want to just be like, oh well, one of those is out, so now we're just going to completely collapse. You need somebody who's maybe flexible enough to go and open, but also go in at three, go
you
at
could,
four.
You could potentially open with Joe Root.
That's what I was thinking. Like, he's so good at finding the gaps in the power play, and when there's field restrictions, that if he's coming in at three, he might be something he's having to bat outside the power play a bit more, and that's when Root seems to struggle a bit. So if you bat him with Roy, I think it's quite a good foil, because you've got one player who's very belligerent, another one who's very touch player. I think that could be an option, but it'd be a bit harsh on Hales as well.
Hales will come back in, I'm pretty sure, for the Champions Trophy.
Speaking about the other team in the contest was India. Do you think that the side has grown under the aggressive style of Virat Kohli after MS Dhoni stepping down, which was unexpected?
I think it's been quite tough for Kohli, having Dhoni on the pitch. He might have a crossover of styles, and every match you can see Kohli and Dhoni getting together, so there might still be a lingering over of Dhoni's captaincy style.
MS Dhoni should permanently retire from one of those sides to just allow Kohli to go through.
No, he can't, because he's been so good in this over this one day series, and he could probably still play tests if he wanted to. He's that good, especially in the subcontinent.
I think the real I think Kohli's done a really good job as captain, but I think the tests in the limited overs will definitely be when he does retire. I don't in any way, shape or form think that Dhoni should retire. I think it will be a difficult transition period when he does, because even he is obviously involved to some extent, but even not having him there, it's sort of like losing that safety net of if things do start to go wrong.
Yeah, he has been named the vice captain of the team recently, so
it's always important to have a good level of experience on the pitch as well, especially when your chips are down and the team's not playing well. Dhoni's been around for so long, he knows the game so well, and to lose that experience will be massive for India.
And
having him on the pitch,
having him
just around the team is just so important for the younger lads.
Now moving on to the smaller format of the game, the Pakistan Super League is starting up soon. First of all, let's give all credit to the sponsors and the franchise holders for gifting this wonderful league to the people. I mean, how big is this a threat to all the other leagues like IPL, Big Bash, having players like Sangakkara, Jai Wadhne coming in and playing for them?
I think it's tough for the league playing in the UAE when they probably won't get that bigger attendances, but I don't think there's much they could do about that, is there?
No, I don't think it was that big last year. I think it was the first year it was on last year, and I don't think it received too much attention, and also it's not on Sky or Channel 5 or anything like that, is it?
There's not much coverage of it over here.
I mean, I'm a part-time cricket fan. I didn't even know it was a thing, so
yeah.
I guess that says it all.
Yeah, so coming to your point again, Harry, PSL is played in the UAE, as you know, but supposed to be captains like Misbahulak have been coming out and saying that it should be played in Pakistan for a better exposure to the players. So do you think, does this mean ICC should move the ban on Pakistan playing cricket?
Security measures.
I think you'd struggle to then get the international players that is what is going to make the... if you look at the PSL squads, they have some outstanding names in those squads, and I think if you move it to Pakistan, I know they're thinking of playing final in Lahore, but I think if you move the whole tournament there, you'd get a lot of people maybe questioning the same.
Morgan, for example.
Morgan and Hales might not be.
Look at the Bangladesh, which is completely fair enough, because at the end of the day, you can't really say to somebody, have a go at somebody for not touring somewhere where there's perhaps this dangerous threat, because it is at the end of the day. If they choose their own safety, or they think that their safety is harmed in any way, then they'll just say no on
play. Yes, moving on to the Indian Premier, which is, yeah, this year is going to be played in India again. I think a part of it is again going to be played in UAE, maybe two or three of the group games of all the groups. And then as well, yeah, the current IPL title holders are Sunrisers Hyderabad, which was led by David Warner last year. How effective do you think is Warner's captaincy again this year for Hyderabad to lift the trophy again?
I think Warner's typically like Australian, like typically aggressive captain. I think that sort of gets through to the players. I think Sunrisers played a very aggressive brand of cricket. I think in the final, I know it was on the wicket that England played on the other day, they scored like 210 or something, was it?
Yeah, it was like 400 runs in the final.
And he leads from the front, Warner, as well. He opens the bat and he's their best player, and he sets the example, he sets the tone, really.
Again, recently, again, on news, it said that a few of the English players will be going just before the IPL gets over. So is this an effect on the franchise holders for choosing an English player because they're not going to be there for the full length of the IPL?
I think it might potentially be, because, you know, but still there's so many people saying, you know, that they think that England players are going to be snapped up in the IPL. I mean, Yuvraj Singh was saying the other day that he thinks Stokes is going to be one of the like big sellers in the IPL. I think because they came second in the World 2020 last year, that might hold some that might influence them a little bit, but I think it could potentially maybe one or two of the players, if they know that they're definitely going to have to play in the island island games, because we do notoriously field sometimes a weaker side for the island ODI series. We sometimes play like a few like up and coming players, but you know, with the Champions Trophy around the corner,
we should go and try and smash them and get 500. I reckon get our best team out and try and smash them around the park.
Having said that,
it'd be embarrassing if we lost.
It could go either way. Like
Kevin O'Brien again.
Having said that, again, the IPL is going to be played this May, which is just before the Champions Trophy. And IPL, as you know, is a 2020 format. Do you think the ICC should do something where they keep the Champions Trophy as the first priority? Should have kept them ahead before the IPL goes on, because the T20 style could affect the 50-over play at Champions Trophy. Do you guys think
I don't think so. I think money talks, and at the end of the day, the people who run the game are going to be lured towards whichever one earns them more money, and that would inevitably be the IPL. I mean, as much as I prefer the 50 the one day game, I think money talks in any sport, and at the end, that's what's going to lead the scheduling.
I don't think it matters too much, and I think more importantly, Champions Trophy, trying to get eight teams to fit around a schedule, because we've been discussing before we came on air the amount of random tours that there are going on in the next few months, teams flying all over the world, so to get a slot in a country for a few weeks to play all eight teams to play, it must be quite a challenge.
Also, I think 50 over cricket is pretty much an elongated version of 2020 now. You'll see that team.
They're transferable skills,
aren't
they? Yeah,
they're scoring at 6-7 over consistently. So I don't think there's too much of a difference between the two anymore.
How effective do you all think that IPL is? Because I see teams like England and performing much better than they used to at the subcontinent at this stage. So is IPL and the other leagues just bringing the level of standard which other teams play in the subcontinent, like England, Australia?
I think it gives more exposure. It gives more exposure to players to those conditions. It also gives more exposure to players to very talented cricketers in other teams. And whereas instead of them being your rivals, they're suddenly your teammates, and you can like pick their brains, and you know, you've got very good like world-class captains in there, and you can learn a lot, I think, from franchise cricket, and it does broaden the game, I think.
Do you again think, it was a question in the last podcast, I'm just bringing it up again, how do you think English cricket or English franchise league should upgrade from just as following as something like the IPL or Big Bash?
If they're going to do it, I think it's a good thing. I think they need to do it, really, to like keep English cricket going, because I think it's dying a bit in terms of like viewing figures and that sort of thing. I think if they're going to do it, they should do it with a city-based tournament. There's no point doing like Lancashire, Derbyshire, that's not really going to work. So if they did like Manchester and then a couple of teams from London. The only question mark is for counties like Derby, what Derbyshire, whether they're going to die out as a result. I think the ECB needs to find a way to.
I think they were going to do two tournaments, one the usual T20, probably hopefully shorter because that goes on for way
too long.
And then like the franchise one later in the summer, like a 3-week period and play every game. Maybe eight cities or something,
Yeah, I think that was like the plan, and also I think in some ways it worked better because I think the way that they were planning on doing it was doing it in blocks, so you'd have your county championship in a block, your ODI, your like 50 overs in a block, and then your 2020, which is good because you often match like county matches, like somebody will be playing really well in the county championship and then all of a sudden they'll move into the 50 overs and the 2020s, and when they come back at the end of the season when they've been scoring like 200 in April, they go to August and they're scoring 5.
It's quite often like Monday to Thursday 4-day game, Friday T20, Sunday 50 over, and you just can't get any form from that.
Moving on, the last part of this podcast, we'll be talking about an emerging 2016, to be fair. I felt it was Adam Zampor, to be fair, the Australian spinner, the young leg spinner. How effective do you think he's going to be in the future years? Is he going to be someone like Shane Warne for the side?
I don't think he'll be as good as Shane Warne. I don't think there'll ever be another Shane Warne, but I think he's very good. I think he's probably the best young, like, one-day leg spinner in the world. I don't know if he's touring India with Australia in a few weeks. I don't know if he got in the squad, but I think it's an opportunity for Australia to like try and get him into the Test team on which wickets are going to be turning.
They picked four spinners, I think, and one was like a 19-year-old who's barely played a first-class match.
So Zampa didn't get picked, did he?
I'm pretty sure Zampa would have got picked for that if the 19-year-old's getting in.
Thank you for listening to our second podcast of Sticky Wiki. We'll be joining you next week on URN.